Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all of the latest J2 and J3 news coming up as usual this week. I'm John Steele, hosting again this week, and joining me to talk about the latest events in J2, it's a welcome back to Richie Palmer. Richie, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Thank you for having me on. Dodging Corona, dodging inflation, dodging missiles. Just a typical day in Japan, isn't it?
It's been quite the year, I think it's fair to say, Richie. I know we talk from time to time on Twitter, don't we, online, but it's good to have you back. I was going to say face to face, but even that's not right. It's good to have you back, sort of, online and talking to you live. I think we were hoping to talk maybe last month or a few months ago, but we were busy, schedules didn't match. So thanks for joining me again on the pod this week. Now, Richie, for some reason, I associate your name with the bottom of the J2 table. Apologies for that. I hope that's not a tag that you think is unfair, but I think it might be the same for a few listeners as well. So because I've got you on board this week, we are going to do a little bit of a J2 kind of relegation zone special, if that's okay. So we are going to talk about three of the big J2 games from the bottom of the table from last weekend, round 39, and then hopefully, time permitting, if you don't mind sticking around, you can help me to preview the weekend fixtures in J2 coming up. After all that, as usual, Magic Mike Innes has got all the J3 news in JTalk Short Corner, so don't worry, Richie, we're not going to ask you for a comment on Gifu this time either, so you're safe and you can relax. All right.
Well, let me just say thank God for that. I will just quickly say that I did a quick trip up to Hachinohe in Tohoku and a trip up to Iwaki in Tohoku in the last couple of weekends, and I got to see Gifu lose to both of those teams. Iwaki, not a surprise because they are tearing it up and are so ambitious, but to Hachinohe near the bottom of the table, losing to them. Good times being a Gifu supporter, I tell you that.
Well, it's a good job you enjoyed some new stadiums and some friendly locals and good food. You know, it's more about the journey than the destination with Gifu this season, I feel.
Well, so. Probably with any season, John. I
don't. No, fair point.
But let's get to the bottom of J2.
Yeah,
where I should be.
Yes, no, fair enough. Yes, well, some of the teams we're going to talk about might be calling you for some, travel advice for Hachinohe for next season. But Richie, let's get down to it. So in J2, round 39 took place last weekend, and we are going to start at the bottom of the table. Ryukyu 0, Yokohama FC 1 on Saturday, a result that pretty much condemns Ryukyu to J3 football for next year. In my opinion, it leaves them 7 points adrift of safety with just 3 games to go. The crucial goal here was a 35th minute penalty from Koki Ogawa. This was after Zane Isaka had been just about bundled over by Keigo Numata inside the penalty area. I think it was a pretty soft penalty, but I think it was probably just about a foul overall, and that was dispatched by Koki Ogawa. Before that goal, Isaka had gone clean through, but been denied by a smart save from Danny Carvajal in the Ryukyu goal. At the other end, Yuji Roktan, who was continuing to deputise for Sven Brodersen in the Yokohama goal after he was substituted with a suspected concussion against Nagasaki last week, Roktan made a good block from Ren Ikeda early on as well. In the second half, Ikeda went close for Ryukyu again, but Yokohama have become a really difficult team to play against once they get their noses in front, and they're very comfortable playing on the counter-attack, and they nearly extended their lead on a couple of occasions, especially when Ryoya Yamashita went racing clean through, but he was denied by Danny Carvajal, who dived at Yamashita's feet with perfect timing to snuff out the chance. So, yeah, it finished Ryukyu 0, Yokohama FC 1. I think that might be 7 games in a row now without a goal for Ryukyu, if I'm remembering correctly. Richie, football is, J-League football is sometimes very unpredictable, but it looks to me like Ryukyu are going down and Yokohama FC in second place are going up. Have I got that right? Can it really be that simple, do you think?
I think, unfortunately for our Ryukyu supporting friends and, well, fortunately for our Yokohama FC supporting friends, I think that's the way it's going to be, isn't it? I think this game was pretty reflective of how both teams have been playing over the last couple of months. Ryukyu started pretty well and made some chances. As you say, Yokohama quite happy to go attack on the counter and, you know, a bit fortunate with the penalty kick, but as is the way with when you're at the bottom of the league, you get these, you know, penalties, you don't get them there, or you get them against you. And, you know, pretty nice to take him by Ogawa. He's at the top of the league, isn't he? I was pretty surprised when I was just reading that before. I think, you know, Ryukyu, they tried, and if Ikeda had scored, you know, one of those two pretty decent chances he had, it could have been different, right? I think for Ryukyu, it was all about getting one goal and then what can happen after that, but it just continued as it was, didn't it? And they couldn't get through that defense, and Yokohama have been pretty... They didn't offer too much, but just as they have all season, or especially in the later half, they've done enough. You know, squeaked out a 1-0 win, did what they had to do. I think it's just that simple. Ryukyu, unfortunately, look like they're going to be playing in J3 next year.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the league table, and you mentioned we have a lot of Ryukyu, Ryukyu affiliated friends and podcast listeners who probably don't want to look at the league table at the moment. So we'll perhaps keep this brief. But you know, maths is my weak point, as has been discussed at length on the pod. But with three games to go, well, I think they need to win all three, and with no goals in any of the last seven matches, it's just impossible to be confident about that, isn't it? Richie, I said that you wouldn't have to talk about Gifu on the pod. I think that's probably one of the conditions on your rider for agreeing to come on. But real quick, just assuming that Ryukyu do drop down to J3 for next year, how do you feel about that in terms of J3 as a whole? Are they going to be a potential team, you know, that's going to be challenging to go straight back up, or do you think they might have? Maybe a difficult question to answer. Do you think they might do more of a kind of, you know, Sagamihara, who just dropped like an absolute brick, haven't they, this year, back to the bottom of J3? Well, but how do you see it panning out next season, or the too many variables?
Well, there are, and I think, you know, Ryukyu have been unlucky with their Okinawa, which has faced the brunt of COVID this year and last year in Japan, and plus the travel and everything else that's been affected, injuries. But at the same time, if things stay as they are now and they don't make any radical changes, I could see them definitely doing a Sagamihara or a Ehime or a Kitakyushu, kind of more a mid-table kind of, or Gifu, should I say, I guess, you know, more of a mid-table. I mean, I think they'll always have a chance to go up, but I think they've got their own problems that they need, internal problems that they kind of need to sort out. Same with Gifu, etc., that kind of thing that they need to sort out before they really start climbing back up again.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what the playing squad looks like, you know, that to line up for the start of next season. I mean, you imagine that maybe, you know, some of the players that have stood out this year, like Danny Carvajal, it's hard for me to imagine him playing J3 football next year. And I even wonder about the coach, you know, Nacho Fernandez. I know that they had that bounce when he initially joined. But then I wonder if maybe there's even whether he'll be around for next season. But I guess that's something we can discuss at length later, isn't it? At the moment,
still got a chance, don't they? We can't say yes.
Yeah, that's true. But I think, yeah, it looks bleak. Looks bleak for Ryukyu, and yes, for Yokohama FC, quite the opposite. I think it's very fair to say they didn't offer too much. I think the adjectives that we've used all season are like, you know, obdurate, rugged, effective is the one that came up when I talked to Sean Carroll last week. And I think that's funny. They're not a particularly, sparkling, attractive football, but they do get the job done. And I think Ryukyu just once they went behind, it was just a tall order for them to get back into the game, wasn't it? So, I think that's a good summary of the Ryukyu match against Yokohama. Another 1-0 game, which was a big result at the bottom, Richie, came at Shoda Stadium. Gunma 1, Omiya 0. Now, this was a huge 3 points for Gunma, especially considering what happened in the previous round when they lost 6-1 at home to Yamaguchi in a pretty disastrous day. So, yeah, they were able to win and get a clean sheet against Omiya. Gunma, 5 points clear now of the relegation zone, with Omiya 1 point and one place worse off. Although it's worth mentioning at this point, Omiya do have a game in hand on the other teams at the bottom, don't they? And they're actually going to play that this midweek on Wednesday night at home to Yamagata. In this match, Omiya had an early warning in the 8th minute when Gunma hit the inside of the post. It was the ex-Omiya defender Hiroto Hatao with a header from a corner. And we're going to talk more about Hatao in a moment. Gunma keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki was in really good form in this game. He made a hat-trick of saves in a goalless first half, 2 saves from Masato Kojima and another good one from Hiroki Kurimoto. And yeah, as the game wore on, it looked like it was heading for a 0-0 stalemate. But in the 78th minute, Omiya's keeper Ko Shimura tipped a long-range shot from Ryo Kawamoto over the crossbar for a corner, and from that corner, Hatao was able to get his head on the ball from around 6 yards and head in what proved to be the winner. And Omiya pretty much threw the kitchen sink at Gunma after conceding that goal, but apart from a couple of headers that were off target and tons of injury time, I'm not sure if I missed some you know, big event here, but I think it ended up that the final whistle went on about 106 minutes. In the end, in this game, and Gunma held on for that potentially vital 3 points. So Gunma 1, Omiya 0 was the full-time score. Richie, what did you make of this one, and why was there so much injury time? Is that what happened there?
The injury came from, there was a head clash in the can't remember about the 85th minute or so. I can't remember exactly when. I can't remember who it was. One of the Gunma players, and he had his head taped up anyway, so I'm not exactly sure what happened, but he was down for about 10, 15 minutes. And I think the Omiya players obviously wanted him off the field, but they couldn't move him because it was his head or something.
It was quite something like that. It's quite similar to the Brodersen injury the week before in terms of delay.
So it was a bit, that was the reason. So it was justified time. The game itself, did you know Gunma hadn't beaten Omiya in a league match before this game?
So I did not know right that. Wow.
In 7 games. So, yeah, they picked the right time to do it. You know, we were messaging each other during this game, and, you know, Omiya, well, of course, Gunma started off pretty well for the first 5 minutes and actually created a chance or two. And, you know, the weather was sunny and both teams were actually moving the ball around quite nicely, which I was kind of surprised about because I hadn't watched too much of either of them of late. And I was like, oh, you know, they're actually all right. And then, so after that start by Gunma, we saw that Omiya just peppered them down the right side, you know, using Shibayama and stuff, like boom, 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 created those 3 or 4 chances. And you thought they were going to score on there. They didn't. You know, Kushibuki came to save Gunma a couple of times, and then there was the other water break. And then Gunma again, straight after the water break. You know, they came on, they had another good chance. You know, obviously, they're all right when they've had a bit of a break and they can get some directives into what they have to do. But after that, again, Omiya, it was all Omiya. And it looked like, definitely like Omiya should have probably had a 1 or 2 goal lead even going into the halftime. Second half continued, and then even Omiya were probably even better than. And they kept peppering away, and I think we were saying, you know, the goal is going to come soon. But, you know, I think Hosogai for Gunma did pretty well just getting his troops to defend. You know, they obviously lost, what was it, 6-1 last week to Yamaguchi. So I think for them, they just needed to hold on as long as they could. And then it showed, I mean, they got the goal, which was a bit out of the blue, with a header to Hato. You know, they just held on. And Omiya still had some chances after that in the injury time, but I think Gunma just showed some guts that they hadn't showed for quite a while. Like, it wasn't pretty in their defence, but they just did what they had to do to, you know, block that ball. And with Kushibiki in there, I think their probably confidence was up a little bit that, you know, he was going to help them. So, you know, they just held on. And for Omiya, they had their chances. I think it was 18 shots to 8. in the end to Omiya, but, you know, like their season too, I think they've played pretty well lately, but they just couldn't get it in there. And yeah, I'm still confident that they'll get there, that they won't be relegated, but we'll all find out by this Wednesday game, I guess.
Yeah. I guess we're recording at kind of an awkward time, aren't we? Because the game that's coming up tomorrow night is quite pivotal. But yeah, I think it's, I should apologise before we go any further to Omiya supporters, because yes, we were texting each other during this game, weren't we? And I think early in the second half, I texted you, goals coming for Omiya soon, because it just seemed like there was just wave after wave of Omiya attacks, and they were just getting closer and closer. But I reckoned without the Omiya factor. I think I was just treating it like a normal team would have gone in front, you know, from that amount of like concerted pressure on a relegation rival. But yeah, it's Omiya we were dealing with, so obviously that faded away to nothing, and then they let in a soft goal from a corner late on and ended up losing. But I think, you know, when you look at a J2 sort of, you know, the bottom six, bottom seven teams any season, it's no real surprise to see Gunma there, is it? They're, it's kind of their natural, you know, natural place in the order of things. It's, you know, in my mind, Omiya being down there for the sort of second season in a row is a bit more surprising. Obviously, neither of these two sides is safe mathematically, Richie, but do you anticipate that they'll be okay? I mean, Gunma have got the 5-point gap and only a 4 points with a game in hand. I mean, we're going to talk about Iwate in a moment, but what's your gut feeling? Have Gunma done enough? Is that win going to be enough for them now, do you think?
I don't think it will be, because, well, they have what? Kumamoto away this week. That'll be a big ask. You know, Kumamoto lost in the weekend against Akita, so they'll be wanting to make sure, cement their place in the finals up there. Then they have Iwate, which is the big one, at home. It all comes down to that game. If they can draw that game or win it, of course, they're safe. I mean, that's it. Because the final week, then they're playing Mito again, and being the Kita Kanto rivals, Mito has had the wood over Gunma, my Antochigi, for quite a while these last few years. And so that won't be an easy win. And that'll be Akiba's last game as manager for Mito. So I think it's all on the Iwate game for them as to how they go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. What about for Omiya? I mean, obviously, it's been a kind of it's been a record-breaking season in terms of losing to Gunma for the first time. but it, by most other, you know, metrics, it's been disappointing, hasn't it? I think Naoki Soma, like you said, they've been playing okay in the last few weeks. I think he's probably done enough to keep the job for next season. I feel like if Omiya can get the 3 points against Yamagata this midweek, and obviously that's a big ask, if they do win that game, I make them safe. Would you go along with that? Mm-hmm. If they beat Yamagata, yeah, then they're out of it. Okay,
I'd agree, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the fact they've got that game, even if they can get a draw out of that, that still gets them on their way. And then they've got what, Yamaguchi at home, which Yamaguchi have been playing all right. So that, you know, Tokushima and Nagasaki, the final ones, but those, one of those or both of those will probably be out at that time already. You know, they might, their season will probably be over. So there's, I think Omiya should be able to do enough to squeak in, even if they squeaked in three draws or something. You know, that's probably enough to get them safe, I think. So
yes.
I have a bit more confidence on them.
Yes, fair
enough. At the same time, mentally, as we know, Omiya, you know, as we saw last year, you know, they're not too good mentally, but they did it when they had to, right at the end of the year, didn't they? So could be a case of this year being the same.
Yeah, it's almost as if, you know, so many players needing a contract renewal, like, focuses the mind, you know, and you know, players start playing a bit better than they have been. But that's obstructively cynical, so I'll we'll move on. But I think Omiya, there has been some progress. I think one of the points that's come up again and again on Twitter, on social media, is that Naoki Soma, like, he actually knows his best 11, the team that he wants to play and how he wants to set it up, which I think that's the first time in about, you know, three seasons Omi has had that. So, you know, whether you agree with his selections or not, there is a method, you know, behind them. There is a system. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he can do if he's in charge next year, assuming, of course, they stay up. And I'm in agreement with you. I think they will. I think either they'll get the points against Yamagata this midweek, or they'll by hook or by crook, they'll get enough points over the last few games to be all right. Okay, so, yes, fair enough. Okay, well, Richie, we've mentioned Iwate already, because obviously they're the team in second bottom, and... yeah, they still have a big part to play in this relegation running, don't they? At the weekend, they were involved in a pretty action-packed game away at Yamaguchi. It finished Yamaguchi 2, Iwate 2, with some late drama in this game, with Iwate snatching a point thanks to a 96th-minute equaliser from Brenner. Now, this game was played in Shimonoseki, right, at Yamaguchi's kind of alternative stadium. I think they play one game or so a year at that ground. So the pitch didn't look too great, looked pretty dry. But perhaps that's kind of what we need for a Yamaguchi-Iwate match, I don't know. But in an action-packed first half, Yamaguchi were 2-1 up at the break. They went ahead in the 16th minute through their informed striker Kazuma Takai. I think Kenta Matsuyama was back in goal for Iwate for the first time since early August. And although he was able to parry Tsubasa Umeki's close-range header, Takai was on hand to tuck in the loose ball from inside the six-yard box. So Yamaguchi 1-0 up early on. It was a short-lived lead, though, as Iwate levelled in the 22nd minute with a thunderbolt from Masashi Wada. He put in a rising drive from about 20 yards that was too hot for Yamaguchi's rookie goalkeeper Riku Terakado to keep out. So 1-1 midway through the first half. But Yamaguchi were in front again on the half hour after a swift and very well executed counter-attack. Masakazu Yoshioka slipped in Takai, who confidently clipped the ball past Matsuyama for his second of the game. So Yamaguchi were in front at the break, 2-1 ahead. After that, Iwate really had to go for it. I think they realised that defeat would probably be terminal for their J2 survival hopes. I should mention, just before half-time, Terakado, the Yamaguchi goalkeeper, had to make an excellent save. And at the start of the second half, Wada again put in a fierce drive from the edge of the penalty area. This time it rattled the Yamaguchi crossbar and went away. Going into the closing stages, Terakado was called upon again. He had to make a smart reflex save at the near post, and before a corner kick for Iwate in the final minute of stoppage time. In fact, we were beyond the final minute, weren't we, Richard? Because this was the 96th minute, even though only 5 additional minutes had been indicated initially. So that the corner kick right at the death was cleared, but only as far as Yohei Okayama. And when he put the ball back into the danger zone, Brenner headed it past Terakado via a deflection off a defender. I think it might have been a Kosuke Kikuchi who'd come on as a substitute who got the last touch. But yeah, Brenner's goal, I think. And the referee had obviously had enough excitement for one day. He blew the full-time whistle while Iwate was still celebrating before Yamaguchi even had a chance to kick off. So Yamaguchi 2, Iwate 2 was the final score. A first point in 4 games for Iwate. And as we've discussed, they are 4 points adrift of Omiya, third bottom Omiya, who have that crucial now game in hand against Yamagata coming up. Richie, very entertaining game. Yamaguchi 2, Iwate 2. What did you make of it? And can Iwate get out of it, do you think?
It was a pretty entertaining game, I will say. I think we discussed this, but probably could have gone either way. Iwate had their chances to actually win it, but probably a draw in the end is a fair result. I think Yamaguchi just quickly won't talk too much about them. Takai has been in great form of late, and he showed that with his 2 goals, very great goals. But I was quite impressed with Iwate. They pressed quite hard, and that Wada strike was a beautiful one that got them the goal. I think in this game, it just showed the difference in a team that had to win and a team that, of course, would have liked to win at home, but it wasn't everything. And Iwate just showed that just at the end, they put that pressure on. They knew that. You could see they were desperate for it. And that's, if you're in a relegation battle, that's what you want to see from your team. It's kind of something you're not seeing so much from Ryukyu or etc. We saw it from Gumo in the weekend. We saw it from Iwate. So for me, that gives me a bit of hope that they might actually be all right. Just looking at their final draw, they're playing Verdy at home next week. That could be anyway. Verdy's not too bad at the moment, but last home game of the season. But then, of course, after that, it's Gunma and Corfu, both away. But Iwata's form has actually been better away than at home. So, you know, not that big. And they've only won 4 at home, but I think they've only won 5 away. In saying that, I don't think away is a scary place for them. And, you know, Corfu, Gunma, they're both winnable games if they need to. Verdy, even at the same time, they could. But, yeah, so I think Iwate have shown, and, the, you know, they've got the Brenners, they've got the new Cristiano, who has actually played pretty well. Wada, who, you know, had those great strikes, as you said. So I think they have got a bit of firepower. They can still score goals. And they, as Sean said on the pod last week, you know, they've got no, well, of course they do with them themselves, but there's not much pressure, and probably from the rest of Japan, on them to win. They haven't got big support in Iwate at the moment, and Morioka, you know, they're still only dragging, getting in 1,500, 2,000 a game. So I don't think there's that much pressure on them, and that could serve them well. I think Gunma's probably got a bit more pressure on them. Will have a bit more pressure. Omiya will as well. But I think there's still a chance of, I won't say they're down until that Gunma game. Whatever happens in that game, that's I think that, well, if they can't, if they can win it, they can get out. If they can't win it, obviously they won't make it. So
Yeah, I think Iwate is such a kind of interesting and enigmatic team. And I think if we look at the bottom four that we have in the table right now, I think it's fair to say I won't upset any Omiya or Ryukyu supporters if I say they've clearly underachieved this season based on what they were expecting to do, you know, in pre-season. Gunma, as I kind of alluded to already, I don't think anybody is surprised to see Gunma in like the bottom six of a J2 league table, you know, coming into the relegation run. And even Gunma supporters probably are kind of like not surprised about that. And for Iwate, if you keep in mind, you know, the playing budget and the recruitment that they did in the off season, you know, coming into their first ever J2 season, I think if you'd said to the manager, Yutaka Akita, you know, well, you'll be in with a shout of survival with 3 games to play, he might have taken that at the start of the season. So I think in terms of expectation, maybe Iwate are kind of aligned more with what they had expected, you know, before a ball had been kicked back in February. So maybe in a way, yeah, you mentioned pressure. I think it will weigh, it clearly has weighed on Ryukyu over the last few rounds. They know that they've underachieved to an almost criminal degree at times this season. Same for Omiya, whereas I think Iwate, perhaps will it stand them in good stead that they are kind of where they probably more or less expected to be at this stage? I don't know. I mean, but then again, they're a funny team. You mentioned the running that they've got. That could be 9 points from those 3 games, or it could be none, you know, the way that they play. You just don't know. But I would add, on a kind of sporting sense, of these 4 teams that we have at the bottom, which team has kind of added the most in terms of entertainment value or talking points this season? It's probably Iwate, isn't it? I mean, in terms of how much fun they've been to watch or to talk about. I mean, no disrespect to the other 3 teams, it's good, but I think Iwate are the ones where, I don't know, they've just been the most quirky and interesting.
I'd agree with that completely. And I think, as you said, it just comes down to the other teams have been underperforming around them, right? But they, you know, they've been performing on par or even better in some of those away wins. Against the Jets and against the Omiyas, et cetera. They've been a good watch.
Yeah, yeah. My son still asks me occasionally, because he went to the Yokohama FC game at Mitsuzawa where Iwate won 3-0. And he periodically just brings it up, and he's like, that, you know, how did that happen? What happened there? And I don't have any answers for him. I'm like, I don't know, son. That kind of thing happens sometimes. It's best to just not worry too much about it. Don't try and explain it and move on. But yeah, they do have performances in them. I think you mentioned they had that win away at Jeff, didn't they, early on in the season, which was like a classic sort of the kind of away smash and grab that you'd associate with a sort of Akita team. So I think they're not out of it just yet, are they? But I really think it's 50-50. You know, like you said, I think that Gunma game is the key one for them. So, all to play for. And even if they do go down, Iwate, I don't think they have embarrassed themselves in J2 this season. I think they've been a good watch. They've enhanced their brand, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed watching them. I think even just seeing that incident where Brenner picked up, was it a Ryukyu player, by the legs and carried him off when he was down injured. That, yeah. Behind, that was
pretty classy, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was worth the price of admission alone, I think. So, we'll see how things go in the running. Okay, thanks for that, Richie. We'll take a quick comfort break now. I think the listeners are going to hear me round up all of the other games from round 39. And then, please join me again. We'll take a look at the round 40 fixtures coming up this weekend. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, solo this time, rounding up all of the other action from round 39 of the J2 weekend. Now, leaders Niigata needed a late Kaito Taniguchi goal to earn a point from their trip to playoff hopefuls Yamagata. The hosts went straight for Niigata in the first half and eventually took the lead in the 34th minute. A deep cross from Shintaro Kokubu was headed down in the Niigata penalty area, and after Kota Yamada failed to gather the ball, it dropped just right for Akira Disaro to score from about 10 yards. Now, Niigata had much more of the game in the second period and pushed hard for an equaliser. Yamagata keeper Masaaki Goto had to make an instinctive block from point-blank range after he spilled one shot midway through the half. That turned out to be an excellent save. And the visitors Niigata secured a point with just 5 minutes left, Taniguchi swivelling just inside the penalty area and firing low into Goto's right-hand corner, the ball going in off the post. So Yamagata won, Niigata won at full time. Yamagata still in playoff contention, of course, and surely it's only a matter of time before Niigata are promoted. Third-placed Okayama suffered a surprise defeat away at Kanazawa, losing 3-1. Kanazawa played extremely well in this game. Perhaps that's a sign that they can relax now and play more freely now that they're mathematically safe. They nearly went in front early on when Hiroya Matsumoto rattled the Okayama crossbar with a superb effort from outside the box. And the hosts took the lead in the 19th minute. Kyohei Sugiura very easily got away from the Okayama defence down the Kanazawa left flank, advanced into the penalty area, and then coolly fired the ball into the bottom corner for 1-0. Okayama, though, nearly equalised midway through the half when Mitch Duke crashed a header against Yuto Shirai's crossbar following a corner. And Okayama had the perfect chance to level the scores with a penalty in the 29th minute. This was awarded after Yuto Nagamine had just about tripped Stefan Mork in the penalty area. Now, Jordi Bice took the spot kick, but it was brilliantly saved by Shirai. Unfortunately for Kanazawa, though, Bice was quickest to the loose ball, and he was able to convert for close range for 1-1 and his 7th goal of the season. After that, some excellent Kanazawa defending made sure that it was still 1-1 at the break. Shirai did really well to block a shot from Yudai Tanaka, and Kanazawa centre-back Hone Yoshoji superbly tackled Mitch Duke on the follow-up to prevent that loose ball turning into a goal. So 1-1 at half-time. Into the second half, Kanazawa retook the lead thanks to an own goal from Jordi Bice. A very, very nice flowing attack from the home side led to Hiroya Matsumoto putting in a cross from the left flank, which Bice could only divert past his own goalkeeper, Daiki Hota. So Kanazawa back in front at 2-1 in the 52nd minute, and it was nearly 3-1 shortly afterwards, but Boyce's centre-back partner, I think Yasutaka Yanagi, made a brilliant headed clearance off the goal line when Hota was beaten. Despite creating lots of chances, though, Okayama couldn't equalise, and it was Kanazawa who scored a third goal in second-half stoppage time, Keita Fujimura crossing low from the right wing for the unmarked Shintaro Shimada to tap in. So, great win for Kanazawa, and we have to be realistic, it probably ends Okayama's automatic promotion hopes, really. Niigata now need just 1 point, and Yokohama FC 2 points for them to clinch the top two spots in the table. Now, continuing a turbulent round for the teams at the top of the table, Kumamoto is still fourth despite being stunned at home by Akita, who took all 3 points back to Tohoku with a 2-1 win. Akita caught Kumamoto cold with a goal in just the third minute here. Keita Saito was able to nip past his defender Henry Iuha just inside the Kumamoto penalty area on the right, and his low cross was perfect for Taira Shige to tap the ball in from inside the 6-yard box. Kumamoto did their best to chase the game after that, with lots of headed chances. In particular, Yusei Toshida was unlucky to see his header come back off the inside of the post without crossing the line. And after that, Naohiro Sugiyama smashed a fierce drive against the Akita crossbar from a well-worked corner kick routine. But it was Akita who doubled their lead 7 minutes into the second half. Kumamoto defender Kohei Kuraki carelessly lost possession on the edge of his own penalty area, and then Shige, scorer of the first goal, was able to cross low for Tomofumi Fujiyama to rattle in from the around the penalty spot for 2-0. Kumamoto did pull a goal back about 7 minutes from time when Shohei Aihara bundled a low cross from Shun Ito over the line from close range, but it turned out to be Akita's afternoon, and the final score was Kumamoto 1, Akita 2. Fantastic finish to the season for Akita. They're suddenly banging form. For Kumamoto, I don't think they'll be panicking because, yes, in fourth place, and with the number of points they have already, they're virtually assured of a top six finish at this point. Now, Sendai's troubles continued at Yurtec Stadium as they conceded 2 goals in the last 40 minutes to lose at home to Tokyo Verdy. Sendai are still sixth, but in just horrible form, going into the run-in. This game was scoreless until the 76th minute when, from a training ground corner routine, Seiya Baba's cross was headed in by the unmarked Itsuki Someno to give Tokyo Verdy the lead. After that, Verdy goalkeeper Mateus made a brilliant save from Motohiko Nakajima as the Sendai man went clean through. Ryota Kajikawa then had a shot well saved by Yuma Obata in the Sendai goal, but it was 2-0 to the visitors in the 88th minute when Toyofumi Sakano, who was standing right in front of goalkeeper Obata and looked offside initially, but I think was played onside by Sendai's Ryan Yonggi, who was out wide on the left. Sakano was able to collect a scuffed shot from a teammate and then tuck the ball in from close range for 2-0. And that's how it finished. Sendai 0, Tokyo Verdy 2. 3 straight wins for Verdy, who are having a great finish to the season. Sendai are in serious danger of missing out on the top six altogether at this rate. Fifth-placed Oita went closer to booking their playoff spot with a 3-1 home win over Nagasaki, who are now 4 points off the top six in 10th place. Oita had a fantastic start in this game, scoring twice in the first 5 minutes. There were less than 60 seconds on the clock when Masaki Yumiba swept Oita in front from the edge of the penalty area, and it was 2-0 just 4 minutes later. The impressive and informed Kenta Inoue cutting the ball back for Tsukasa Umesaki to score from close range. And then it was 3-0 before half-time with a very similar goal. This time, the impressive Inoue cut back for a friend of Big Pod, Shun Nagasawa, to score with a looping shot. Yes, so 3-0 in the 40th minute, 3-0 at half-time to Oita. Right at the start of the second half, Nagasaki pulled one back through Shunya Yoneda, a tidy finish from just inside the penalty area from him, and it seemed briefly like a comeback might be on because Oita goalkeeper Shun Yoshida had to make a really good save from Edgar Junior when Nagasaki threatened again, but they couldn't really get back into the game, and it finished Oita 3, Nagasaki 1. Tokushima Vortis haven't given up on a playoff place just yet. They are 3 points off the top six after an entertaining 3-2 win at home to Machida in round 39. Machida actually took the lead in this game twice in the first half, initially with a pile driver from the edge of the box from Aria Jasura Hasegawa. That was in the 28th minute. But just 6 minutes after that, Tokushima equalised. Koki Sugimori cutting into the penalty area from wide on the right and then scoring with a low shot into the bottom corner. Machida retook the lead in the 38th minute. A brilliant one-touch passing move set Shusuke Ota clean through, and he confidently beat Jose Suarez in the Tokushima goal to make it 2-1 to Machida at half-time. In the 64th minute, though, Tokushima restored parity again. Defender Kohei Uchida stretched out a leg and volleyed in a corner from Shunto Kodama. And then the comeback was completed in the 71st minute when another cross came into the Machida box from the left flank. Sugimori tried an overhead kick but failed to connect, and when the ball bobbled free, El Seno was on hand to fire in from 12 yards to make it 3-2 and pretty much took the roof off the Pocari Sweat Stadium. A big, big reaction from the Tokushima fans. I think they knew that was a crucial goal. Yeah, and it finished Tokushima 3, Matsuda 2 in that game. Jeff Chiba kept their outside hopes of a playoff place alive by winning 1-0 away at Mito. Solomon Sakuragawa scored the winner from the penalty spot here in the 77th minute. Mito's Yoshitake Suzuki was adjudged to have tripped Koki Yonekura inside the box. Pretty soft decision, I think, if you watch the replay a few times. But the penalty was given, and Sakuragawa confidently converted the penalty from 12 yards. And yes, not a classic game, I think it's fair to say, at Keisuke Denki Stadium. The man of the match was surely Jeff's keeper, Shota Arai, who made a string of fine saves to preserve a clean sheet. So yeah, Mito 0, Jeff Chiba 1 at full time. Jeff are in ninth, but only 4 points adrift of the playoff places, so they might still dare to dream at this point. Finally, from the weekend games, Tochigi picked up a 1-0 win away at Kofu. The vital goal in this one came about 10 minutes from full time, with Yojiro Takahagi and Juninho combining to set up Ryo Nemoto, who clipped the ball beautifully over the onrushing goalkeeper Kohei Kawata. Before that, it had seemed more likely that Kofu would go in front. In the first half, William Lira headed against the bar, and in the second, a fine effort hit the inside of the post and came back out. I think that was from Yoshiki Torikai, or possibly Junma Miyazaki. It wasn't clear from the highlights that I saw. But with about 5 minutes left, yes, Kofu defender Eduardo Mancha managed to pick up a straight red card. I think he kicked out a Tochigi player. I think it was Nemoto, kicked him in the kneecap after they tussled for the ball. And the crazy thing about this was Kofu had already been given the free kick, so Mancha should have just been getting ready to take the free kick and carry on. Instead, he got the straight red in his face in a ban. So, yeah, not really sure what the thought process was behind that one. But yeah, great win for Tochigi. Kofu 0, Tochigi 1 was the full-time score. And just before I get back to talking to Richie about round 40, there was a bonus midweek game on Wednesday night, October the 5th. This was the game held over from round 33, Omiya at home to Yamagata. And Omiya took another tiny step towards J2 survival and managed to dent Yamagata's playoff hopes by scoring a late equaliser to draw 1-1 in this game. Yamagata had taken the lead in the 10th minute thanks to a brilliant curler from the edge of the box from Ryonosuke Kabayama. And Yamagata had plenty of chances to extend their lead in the second half. Thiago Alves hit the post when he was clean through, and then he set up De La Torre for a shot that was well saved by Ko Shimura in the Omiya goal. At the other end, Yamagata's keeper, Masaki Goto, he made an excellent stop at close range on the goal line after there was a scramble following a corner. And Omiya's leveller came in the 89th minute. Keisuke Oyama slipped the ball through to Masato Kojima just inside the penalty area, and he had space to get a shot on goal. He fired through Goto's legs to make the full-time score. Omiya 1, Yamagata 1. Yamagata a 7th and 2 points outside the top 6 with 3 games to go. Omiya 5 points clear of the relegation zone. It looks like safety will be confirmed soon, but yeah, they're not mathematically safe just yet. But Omiya 1, Yamagata 1 was the Wednesday night result. All right, I think we're up to date with J2 for now, so please stay tuned. After a quick piece of music, I'll be back with Richie. We're going to look at the round 40 games coming up this weekend. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. Richie's back with me. He's going to help me to look ahead to the upcoming games in round 40 in J2 this weekend. Just before that, a quick reminder that on Wednesday night this week, the 5th of October, there's the kind of a crucial rearrange game from round 33 in J2. So Omiya hosting Yamagata. This is like the last game in hand of the season. Although I might be speaking too soon with typhoons and COVID around. But yes, Omiya against Yamagata on Wednesday night at NAC 5 Stadium. So the 20th place team hosting a team in 7th. If Yamagata can win, they will go into the top 6 on goal difference, whereas a win for Omiya would see them pretty much safe. That would put them 7 points clear of the drop zone with 3 games to play. But yes, as mentioned, by the time you're listening to this, that game will have been played, so we won't spend too long talking about it. Instead, Let's move on to the round 40 preview. So on Saturday, October the 8th, Richie, five matches, four of them kicking off at 2 p.m. Now, first place Niigata, they'll be promoted outright if they can beat playoff hopefuls Sendai at home. Fourth place Kumamoto take on still in deep trouble Gunma in 19th at the Egao Kenko Stadium in Kyushu. And it's a must-win game for both sides with faint playoff hopes as Nagasaki host Tokushima. And in a game which is, we could harshly but fairly describe as a dead rubber, Akita host Jeff Chiba at Soyu Stadium. And then at 5 p.m, there's a huge game for the second bottom side, Iwate, as they host mid-table Tokyo Verdy, desperately needing a win. For my money, defeat for Iwate would surely mean that they'll be going down, back down to J3 after just one season in the second tier. So, Richie, I think I know what you're going to say, but which is your pick of the games from Saturday?
What I'm going to say, John, is that Akita vs. Jeff is not a dead rubber, mate. Jeff are on 55 points, aren't they? So they're still quite a chance to get in that last playoff spot, aren't they? So, it's, you know, the same as Nagasaki.
I hear what you're saying, Richie, but it's Jeff.
Well, I was just looking too. They're playing Akita, right, which they should beat on paper. Then Ryuki, which they should beat on paper. And then Yamaguchi, which they should beat on paper. So that's probably zero wins for them coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be nil-one, nil-one, nil-one.
And Jeff have never beaten Akita. There's another one for you. So there you go. Anyway, but no, that is not my choice. My choice would definitely be, well, there's two here that I'll put above the others. And they're all good games, actually. First one, of course, Niigata versus Sendai. I think Niigata deserve us watching them because they have played brilliantly this season. This is probably going to be their promotion. Well, when they get their promotion after all these years in J2, they've, you know, done it hard, but all the hard work they've done to get up there. That's not saying, of course, Sendai's on their last legs. Pretty much they lose this. I think it's all over for them. If they win by some miracle, you know, they've still got a chance again. But I think that game will actually be quite a good game to watch. But of course the other one, I think Nagasaki and Tokushima, definitely, like, you know, the loser is out, you know, there's last chance to win for both these teams. If they get a draw even, it's probably
it's not enough.
So those are my picks, but then, you know, you can't go part, you know, Kumamoto Gunma, you got two, you know, player spot versus relegation survival kind of, you know, going on. And of course you've got Iwate versus Verdy, which is the same, you know, Iwate, their last home game of the year, you know, trying to stay up. So there's so many good games actually on that on the Saturday, I think.
I agree. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Richie, go ahead.
No, I just say you could pick either or any of them, and even Akita versus Jeff if you really wanted to, but maybe with no one watching them they might actually win.
Yeah,
didn't know how Martin spoke that, but, you know, we'll find out.
No, he understands. He knows Jeff's ways, I think, by now. Yeah, it's kind of a bit frustrating that all the games are kicking off. Well, most of the games are at the same time, really. I'm never really sure why this happens. I know there must be various reasons, but I guess for the 2 p.m. games we have to pick one, and then that's kind of the appetizer for the big Iwate game against Tokyo Verdy in the evening. But I think it's kind of good to have so many games with something riding on it, I think, at this stage, you know, compared to the last couple of seasons where without the playoffs it's not been picking the games of the week was much easier last season and the season before by round 40. So it's good to have the excitement this time. How about Sunday then, Richie? The rest of the games are coming up on Sunday. There's a huge game at 1 p.m. as Okayama go to Kofu. That's third place, visiting 18th. Now, if Okayama lose, that will mean promotion for both Niigata, in the case that they haven't done their job on Saturday, and Yokohama FC in second. Four games at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Bottom side Ryukyu will be relegated for certain if they lose at 14th placed Kanazawa, who are now mathematically safe and they're on a four-game unbeaten run. Third bottom Omiya could secure survival if they beat Yamaguchi at home. If Iwate have also lost at home to Verdy on Saturday, Yamaguchi, by the way, you know, relatively safe, well, mathematically safe and comfortable in 15th. Yamagata could move closer to securing a playoff spot if they beat Mito at the ND Soft Stadium. Of course, that game, you know, might have changed complexion depending on how Yamagata have done at Omiya on Wednesday. Machida against Tochigi. I don't know if you're going to pick me up on this one, Richard. That looks like a dead rubber to me at Nozota. And the weekend concludes at 6 p.m. with second place Yokohama at home to fifth place Oita. Now, regardless of results elsewhere, Yokohama will be promoted to J1 if they win this game. But the sting in the tail is, of course, Oita are managed by ex-Yokohama FC boss Takehiro Shimotaira. So whether he's going to return to haunt his former club, we wait to see. Richie, what do you make of the slate on Sunday?
Sunday's a lot reliant on the results on Saturday, isn't it? Like, which games to actually watch. I think for me, well, definitely Yokohama FC versus Oita. I think they're both, you know, they're both still playing something. If they're both still playing for something, well, Oita still will be, but if Yokohama have to win to guarantee promotion, that'll be a great game to watch, I think. The other one, which I'm interested in, I'm not sure it's the game of the round, but Kanazawa versus Ryukyu. As you said, Kanazawa's got nothing. Ryukyu, this is it. This is their last chance, you know. Are they going to score a goal? Are they going to do something to give their fans some bit of hope or, you know, just some pride in the jersey? For me, it's probably those two. I think, of course, Omiya, Yamagata, Okayama will still have something to play for, but I think they will... For myself, probably those two, I'd say. How about yourself? What are you thinking?
No, I think it's going to be an interesting kind of a full afternoon if listeners are lucky enough to have the time, because you know 1 p.m. I think all eyes will be on the Okayama match, because if they lose away at Kofu, then Yokohama FC are promoted without kicking a ball, and then the 6 p.m. game against Oita becomes a bit of a party for them.
We should just mention, shouldn't we, though, Kofu are playing the Emperor's Cup semi-final tomorrow, aren't they?
That's right. Yes.
And it looks like they've put pretty much all the eggs into their basket, right, for the last few weeks, hasn't it? They win their game against, is it Kashima Antlers, I think?
Yes, I believe it is. Let me double check so that I can roll that in smoothly. But yes, both of the Emperor's Cup semi-finals are this midweek, aren't they? Wednesday night. And yes, Kofu are the last J2 representative, and I believe, I'm just triple checking, yeah, they're playing Kashima at the supporter friendly time of 5:30.
Are they playing their game at home? Was their game at home?
I think it's at Kashima. I'm back. Yeah, Kashima. Yeah, 5:30 at Kashima on a regular Wednesday for you, Richie. How is that for joined up thinking?
Magic of the cup.
We should say good luck to Kofu. You know, it would be great to have a J2 side in the Emperor's Cup final, I suppose, but it could leave them a bit leggy, couldn't it, for the Okayama game on Sunday.
That was Okayama, your point. Will be pretty, I think they have to do pretty well to actually lose this game. Unless Kofu actually win the game against Kashima and they've got, you know, some kind of high that gets them through the game, I think. It's for Okayama to win, I think, if they, you know.
I think it benefits Okayama either way, doesn't it? Because if Kofu lose, they'll be tired and demoralised, and if they win, they'll be tired and have probably be coming off a sort of 24-hour, you know, bender. They'll have been on the Raz. To be fair, there are not many places to go on the Raz in Kashima, so perhaps it's if you're going to qualify for a sort of domestic cup final, Kashima might be the sort of safest place to do that with a game coming up at the weekend. But don't want to disparage Kashima too much. Habi's a very nice place, but not a lot going on after 10 p.m. I would suggest. I think as well, Omiya, you know, like you said, it hinges a lot on what happens in the Wednesday night game against Yamagata. But that could be a sort of survival party. Sounds quite sad, doesn't it? But that could be a survival party for Omiya if they beat Yamaguchi. But yeah, I think I agree with your picks, to be honest. I think perhaps I'm not expecting Okayama to lose that game at Kofu, and that means that, that Yokohama have it in their own hands at 6 p.m. when they host Oita. So yeah, if they can win that game, they're back in J1. And I don't think it's been a particularly stylish or you know provocative brand of football that Yokohama produced this season, but it has been extremely effective. And I think when promotion is secured, I probably have to give Shuhei Yamada, the manager, a bit more credit, because I don't think it's that easy to take a team straight back up at the first time of asking, is it? I think you do need to be very wily to do that. Just ask like Jeff and Niigata supporters about how difficult it is to go back up at the first attempt. So I think he will get some plaudits coming his way if and when that promotion is confirmed. But Richie, still, it's almost amazing, isn't it, that we're down to the last three games and there's still so much riding on so many matches going into the last couple of weeks. But hopefully that makes it more exciting for the listeners, and our rambling chat has helped to make them even more helped to make that anticipation even more exciting for them. So thanks for coming on, Richie. It's really good to touch. Is there anything else you want to mention, or you want to get off your chest before we hand things over to Mike?
I've only been expletives about Gifu, so I'll just say that.
Okay. Well, that's actually... go on, sorry.
No. So thanks to everyone for listening, and hope you enjoyed it. And it's a good couple of weeks of football coming up. Thank God for the finals being back in J2, or the playoffs, should I say. They really make it a lot better with this huge league of, 22 teams. It's like, without it, it was... bit of a struggle, wasn't it, of a season, but it's really good to have them back.
Couldn't agree more. I think even though we I think most supporters would probably say that the playoff format isn't perfect, having playoffs is definitely better than not. So thanks again, Rich. It's really good to talk, and hopefully we can talk again sometime soon, maybe in the closed season or for some season preview or season review action in the next few months. But you mentioned Gifu. Gifu in J3, that seems like a perfect chance to segue into the next segment. So in a moment, Magic Mike Innes is going to be on hand. He has all the J3 news that you need to know in J-Talk Short Corner. So please stay tuned for that. Before we go, though, thanks as always for being a listener and a downloader of the J-Talk podcast and JTET, the Extra Time Show. If you're a Patreon supporter, we really appreciate that as well. So thanks for all the support this season, and I hope you enjoy the run-in as much as me and Richie are going to, it sounds like. So thanks for listening, and please stay tuned. All the J3 news with Mike is coming up next.
Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on fixtures in Round 27, as well as previewing the Round 28 matches coming up this weekend. Straight into the action this week, and on Saturday the 1st of October there were two Round 27 fixtures, both home games for promotion contenders. Holding on to second place by the skin of their teeth after last week's crushing loss to Gainare Tottori, Kagoshima United needed a result and a performance against AC Nagano Parseiro. Kagoshima had the better of the first half and took the lead just before the break when Rei Yonezawa got in front of Yuki Morikawa to head in Yuto Kide's cross. Relief all round the Shinanami Stadium, but the home side's lead lasted only 10 minutes as a defensive lapse allowed Nagano's Ryoji Fujimori to collect Masaki Miyasaka's long ball in plenty of space, cut inside and shoot past Fuma Shirasaka. The game was on a knife edge for 20 minutes, but then Yuji Kimura sent a free kick curling high into the Parseiro box, where Kenya Onodera bundled the ball over the line to put Kagoshima back in front. With 7 minutes left, it was 3-1. Another Kimura set play. Yonezawa again beating his man to the ball and heading in at the near post for his 12th of the season. In injury time, Kagoshima applied icing to cake. Yonezawa racing forward on the break to set up overlapping Eisuke Watanabe, whose cross was dispatched with a perfect diving header by Atsushi Satsukawa. For fans of the counter-attacking goal, much to enjoy here. Final score, Kagoshima 4, Nagano 1. Naoto Otake getting the response he wanted from his Kagoshima squad, but Paseiro made it easy for them in a way that must have disappointed arch-competitor Yuki Stealth. 3 points for Kagoshima then, but what about Fujieda My FC, who successfully managed to stage their game against YSCC Yokohama at the storm-damaged Fujieda Sports Park? My FC took the lead on 16 minutes, a blunder by YSCC's Takuya Fujiwara, ruthlessly exploited by Ryo Watanabe, who intercepted the loose pass, advanced to the edge of the area, and rifled a low shot past Ryosuke Sagawa. But this match followed a similar pattern to the Kagoshima Nagano game, as in the 36th minute, YSCC equalised. Kei Munechika's cutback from the byline, setting up Yumemi Kanda, who curled a superb shot in off the post. Fujieda regained the lead early in the second half, Akiyuki Yokoyama scoring from the spot after Sagawa had upended Watanabe, and the same player made it 3-1 in the 66th minute, picking up on a mishit effort from Tojiro Kubo, squeezing past Fujiwara and Akio Yoshida and scoring from close range. 11 for the season now for Yokoyama. My FC confirmed the 3 points with 18 minutes left, Masahiko Sugita feeding Keigo Enomoto, who drifted along the edge of the box before curling one in from 20 yards. Final score, Fujieda 4, YSCC 1. Comfortable for my FC, who seem well suited to the role of promotion contenders. Kanda's excellent strike aside, YSCC rarely looked likely to repeat last week's win at Matsumoto. The other seven matches were on Sunday the 2nd when Iwaki FC consolidated at the top of the table by beating Kamatamari Sanuki at the J Village. Very quiet first half, but after the restart, Hiromasa Suguri's team simply accelerated away from the visitors, starting in the 64th minute when Riku Saga sent in a pinpoint cross that Daiki Yamaguchi headed just inside the post. That was quickly followed by a goal from Kaina Tanimura, who, after Reo Sugiyama had tried to wiggle through the Sanuki defence, picked up the loose ball and jabbed it past Takiya Takahashi. Two became three in the 75th minute. Eiji Miyamoto's ball into the box met with a header by Rei Iezumi, parried by Takahashi, only for Ryo Arita to nod it back over the line. And Arita, surely in contention for J3 Rookie of the Year, scored his 10th of the season in the 82nd minute, catching Masataka Nishimoto in possession and firing in from 20 yards. Kamatamari might have been outclassed, but they didn't give up, pulling one back in stoppage time when Taiyo Shimokawa crossed for Kohei Matsumoto to head in at the near post. Final score, Iwaki 4, Sanuki 1, and stadium licensing permitting, it's now very hard to imagine Iwaki won't be playing J2 football next season, and they'll deserve it. For Kamatamari, a brave effort, but there was a gulf in quality. So, Kagoshima, Fujieda and Iwaki all won 4-1 to reassert their promotion credentials. How about Matsumoto Yamaga after last week's stunning loss to YSCC? Hiroshi Nanami's team went to Azul Claro Numazu with Ayumu Yokoyama returning to the starting lineup in attack. The 19-year-old missed a big chance in first half stoppage time, receiving a quick through ball from Kazuhiro Sato, but screwing his shot wide of the far post with only Hiromu Musha to beat. Soon after the break, Yokoyama fed Yota Shimokawa, who hurtled down the right and sent in a powerful shot that clipped the bar as Yamaga continued to press for that all-important breakthrough goal. Musha went on to save well from Sato's long-range shot, and then, with the seconds counting down, he saved brilliantly from Ren Komatsu's header. And it ended Numazu 0, Matsumoto 0, a determined defensive display earning the point for Azul Claro. Two crucial points dropped for Yamaga, who fall out of the top three as a result. And what of the outsiders in the promotion race? Could Katare Toyama and FC Imabari close the gap on Matsumoto? At home to SC Sagamihana, Toyama took a 16th-minute lead through Shunta Takahashi, who took advantage of Kentaro Kakoi's lamentable attempt to play sweeper-keeper and clipped it over the retreating Kakoi and into an empty net. Aside from that disastrous moment, the goalkeepers were on top in this one, Katane's Genki Yamada diving full length to keep out a Jungo Fujimoto free kick, Kakoi getting his hand to a Takahashi header and excelling himself by tipping Makoto Lindo's free kick onto the bar. Final score, Toyama 1, Sagamihana 0. Two straight wins for Michiharu Otagiri as Katane's new man in charge, and they remain in contention. Three defeats in a row now for Sagamihana, no goals scored. And Imabari were at home to Gainare Tottori, who last week put Kagoshima to the sword. If the hosts were anxious about a Gainare goal threat, they didn't show it. In fact, they roared out of the starting blocks and were 2-0 up inside 5 minutes, taking the lead when Takuro Uehara crossed from the left, Yuta Mikado's shot was blocked, and Takafumi Yamada nodded in the loose ball. The second came down the right, Yamada getting in the cross, Mikado queuing it up, and Kanta Chiba finishing with a terrific left-foot shot into the bottom corner. Imabari's defence has not been the strongest in recent weeks, but they did manage to keep Tottori at bay, and midway through the second half, Marcus Indio notched a third, hammering in a spectacular angled volley after Gainare defender Sota Maruyama couldn't complete his clearance of Kazaki Nakagawa's through ball. Final score, Imabari 3, Tottori 0. A third straight win and a welcome clean sheet for Imabari, who, like Toyama, closed the gap on Matsumoto, if not on second place in the table. Gainare couldn't recover from their slow start. Elsewhere, the Giravants Kitakyushu against Tegevajaro Miyazaki game pivoted on the 19th minute sending off of Miyazaki keeper Shunsuke Ueda, who in a couple of seconds of madness miscontrolled a back pass and brought down Shun Hirayama, not only getting himself red carded but also conceding a penalty. The first task of substitute goalkeeper Kenta Ishii, making his first league appearance of the year, was to pick the ball out of the net after he'd been beaten from the spot by Hirayama. Giravants were able to expose the visiting defence for a second goal in the 35th minute, attacking with speed down the left-hand side from where Takuya Nagata crossed for Kotaro Fujikawa to finish with a first-time shot from the edge of the box. Tegevajaro weren't able to make much of an impression on the game and fell further behind midway through the second half when a half-cleared corner reached Ryo Sato, who fired in a shot from the edge of the box. Ishii parried it, but Yosuke Kamigata headed home the loose ball. The home side wrapped up their biggest win of the year in the 89th minute, Takeaki Hanigaya feeding Taiga Maekawa, who turned away from Yudai Okuda and finished smartly past Ishii before indulging in an unwelcome spot of badge kissing. Final score, Kitakyushu 4, Miyazaki 0. Giramants take advantage of the extra man to end their three-game losing streak and jump to 11th. A tired performance from Tege Vajaro, who drop into the bottom four for the first time all season. Things are looking a bit brighter for Vanrare Hachinohe, who at home to Ehime FC recorded a third straight win to climb out of the bottom four. Not exactly overrun with quality, this one. Ehime in particular put in the poorest performance I can remember from them this season, rarely threatening Kazuki Hattori's goal. At the other end, Kenta Tokushige pulled off a brilliant double save to keep out two point-blank efforts from Takumi Shimada, and the match was won with half an hour left when Masashi Kokubun, seemingly now given licence to roam forwards, collected the ball in the centre circle, advanced to the edge of the box and shot low into the corner past Tokushige. Final score, Hachinohe 1, Ehime 0. Some positives now emerging from what's been a difficult season at Vanrare, while the mighty Mikans, now their realistic chance of promotion has gone, were more or less absent from this game. Finally, for round 27, FC Gifu and Fukushima United shared the points in a mid-table encounter at Nagaragawa. The hosts gained the upper hand as the first half went on and took the lead in the 41st minute, Charles Nduka getting to the byline and crossing for Kosuke Fujioka to poach a finish at the near post, his 13th J3 goal of 2022. But having shown little attacking intent, Fukushima pulled level almost immediately, Yuta Nobe getting goal side of Takumi Fujitani, who was adjudged then to have tripped his man, Hiroki Higuchi, converting the penalty kick for his first goal since the opening game of the season. More of a dramatic second half than you might expect to this one. Goalkeepers Kazushige Kirihata and Fukushima stand-in Satoshi Osugi both producing good saves to keep the score level. And in injury time, the visitors twice came within a whisker of stealing the win. First when Kota Mori blazed over from close range with only Kirihata to beat. Then when Shoki Nagano's shot was blocked on the line by a combination of Kirihata and Yoshiatsu Oiji. But it ended Gifu 1, Fukushima 1, Yuji Yokoyama again showing a willingness to change his team around to no obvious effect. Fukushima this season arguably somewhat overachieving, and so the two teams meet in the middle. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 27, noting that Ehime and Miyazaki have a game in hand. The top six teams are Iwaki with 60 points, Kagoshima with 56, Fujieda 55, Matsumoto 54, Toyama 51, and Imabari 50. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are, in 15th, Miyazaki with 26 points, then it's Sagami Hana, 23, Sanuki, 20, and bottom with 18, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 28 fixtures over the weekend, when there are three games on Saturday the 8th of October. Away matches for two of the promotion contenders as Kagoshima go to YSCC and Imabari make the trip to Sagami Hana. There's also an orange derby between Ehime and Nagano. The other six matches are on Sunday the 9th. Leaders Iwaki are also away as they make the trip to Tottori. Game of the round and a true six-pointer, third against fourth, Fujieda against Matsumoto. Toyama are away as well, they're at Gifu. Also on offer are Miyazaki against Fukushima, Kitakyushu against Hachinohe, and Sanuki against Numazu. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.